Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. You are listening to the Revolution Health Radio Show. I'm your host, Steve Wright, co-author at scdlifestyle.com. I want to let you know that this episode of RHR is brought to you by 14.4.me. Now, 14.4.me, if you haven't heard of it yet, it's a 14-day healthy lifestyle reset program. So it handles the four areas of your health that we're typically talking about in the show, specifically diet, sleep, movement, and stress. So if you've ever tried to tweak all of those at the same time, I have, it gets really complicated. It can be very confusing and frustrating. And so what Chris has done is he's created this 14-day healthy lifestyle program where it sort of handholds and walks you step by step. How might you structure your day so you still eat good, sleep good, move a little bit, and stay low stress? It can be complicated, but in 14.4.me, Chris has made it easy. So go check it out, 14.4.me, and we'll get on with the show now. With me is integrative medical practitioner, healthy skeptic, and New York Times bestselling author Chris Kresser. Chris, how's your day?
Oh, it's going pretty well. How about you, Steve?
It's going great. I'm in the beautiful mountains in Utah right now.
Sounds nice. Is it snowing?
It's raining. Kind of. Wow. Not to be expected.
Not great for any snow activities, huh?
Yeah, that's why we're having a podcast and I'm not skiing.
Right. Well, we had no measurable rain in the whole in California in January for the first time, I think, ever since they've been keeping records. And it's a crazy drought.
That's not good.
Pictures of like the water levels in various areas around California. It's looking pretty apocalyptic.
I'm going to have to like ask you, Chris, to get on this problem because I really like your avocados and your bananas. And your
there's not going to be a lot of that. Yeah. Well, I mean, the upside is that while California turns into an uninhabitable desert, it's at least a very nice place to live in the meantime.
There's lots of cool people that live there.
I was out in my t-shirt and you know, enjoying 70 degree weather yesterday. So, there's always an upside to everything, right, Steve?
That's true. You got to look at both angles. There's always a good thing.
Oh, yeah.
So before we get on with today's show, Chris, people are dying to know, what have you been eating all day?
So today it was kind of not totally intermittent fast. I skipped breakfast, went to the gym, got a lot of work done early on and just was so focused. I got really into something I was doing. It was a clinician training program. Actually, I'll come back to that in a second. And, I just didn't really want to take the time to stop and eat. So I kept working and then I went to the gym, came back, had brunch, and brunch was
mimosas, so, right?
Exactly. So I had this raw kale salad from Zen Belly cookbook, as I've said, one of my favorite cookbooks by far. And it's like, shredded kale that's marinated and sits for a while and gets tender that way. Some sauerkraut with beets and carrots and cabbage, a green chili pork sausage from my favorite charcuterie, the Fifth Quarter, and some white potato hash browns, the beloved, often maligned white potato.
So delicious, mm-hmm. though, especially with salt and butter.
So good, yeah. This was salt and a little bit of expeller press coconut oil and a little bit of bacon grease just to give it that extra hash brown diner flavor.
Nice. Yeah, it was good. Were you able to crisp them up? Did you like boil them ahead of time and then shave them?
Oh yeah. Yeah. We have this flat electric griddle and what I do is, so I grate them with a grater. So they're pretty fine.
And
they're
raw.
And then I lay them out flat raw and I lay them out flat, but I put a baking sheet over them with this kind of weighted, I don't know what it's called, but it's got a handle and it's basically just a flat, almost like a press. It's like a thing that you press stuff with on the grill and it weighs down the cooking sheet. And then that creates some steam so that the potatoes get kind of steamed. And it also makes them really crispy because it's pressing down and pushing them into the griddle. So it's That's a little trick I picked up from our friend Rob Wolf, actually, when I was out visiting a couple of years ago. He and Nikki and Zoe and Reno, we were staying with him, and Rob pulled out that trick for hash browns. So I've been using it ever since.
I like it. I'm going to have to check this out. I'm going to try this.
It's good.
So tell us more about this project that's got you extremely focused right now.
Got me skipping meals.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've been talking about clinician training for a long time, and this has just come out of my experience working with patients and having a practice that's been largely closed to new patients for the last several years, and the growing demand for functional medicine, you know, practitioners who understand both functional medicine and evolutionary ancestral nutrition and health. And, you know, it's so clear to me now that there's no way that I, as a single practitioner, could ever even remotely come close to scratching the surface of meeting the demand for this kind of work. So many people want and need this kind of help. And even if I train, you know, clinicians, associates that work in my practice, as I've already started to do, there's just a fairly hard limit on the number of people that can serve that way. And so I've always known that the next step would be to create a clinician training program that can serve a lot more people than I could train on a one-on-one basis in my clinic. So I've spent really the last year thinking about this, developing it. You know, I've started and stopped on several different iterations. To be honest, it's taken me longer than anything else that I've ever done to really figure out what the best way to move forward is. And, you know, my book, for example, I wrote my book in about 4 or 5 months. And, you know, the first draft of it was 600 or 700 pages. And of course, I mean, I had a lot of material that I had already written from years of blogging and stuff like that. So it wasn't like I just like started from complete scratch and wrote it in 4 or 5 months. But the outline came together very quickly. My vision for it was clear from the start. It just went, and I didn't really have to rearrange any old ideas or concepts to make it work. Whereas with this training program, I've kind of like gone back to square one. I wanted to. First of all, I went and read the scientific literature on the most recent learning theory, developments in learning theory, and realized that almost everything that we think about learning is not true, or like the way that we have typically been taught in school is like a disaster and the worst possible way to teach in many cases and in terms of retaining information. And so I went down that rabbit hole for a while and got really fascinated by, you know, how we learn and how we retain information and how we translate knowledge into practical skills. Because, of course, that's what the goal of this training is. It's not to just give people a whole bunch of information that they then forget and don't use in their life. It's to transfer the knowledge and skills that people will need to start and manage a really successful and effective functional medicine practice. And so
can you give us like one cool tip about learning that will just blow our minds?
I don't know about that, but you know, the typical method of learning is what you might call covering material. So like, you know, a textbook covers a ton of material, but it's all out of context. You know, it's like learning the alphabet, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. It's out of context. You don't really understand when you read a textbook how it applies to real situations. You don't understand the relative importance of one thing versus another because it's all, you know, basically emphasized to an equal degree. And in terms of medical education, learning a bunch of facts without having any understanding of how they apply to what you're doing in terms of treating patients is not that useful. And so an example of this would be back in the 80s, Harvard transitioned to a case-based, they recognized this, and they transitioned to, Harvard Medical School transitioned to a case-based learning style in their medical school. And it wasn't pioneered by Harvard, it was McMaster University, I think, in Canada. I'm getting that right, started it, but Harvard kind of really expanded it. And so it used to be that medical school, the first 2 years of it was just didactic education. You know, you like lectures, basically. You got lectures on, you know, pharmacology and physiology and all the medical sciences. But and you didn't really get into the clinic and start thinking about patients until the last 2 years. And that's still how a lot of medical schools are set up. But they just totally switched it to where when students come in, they immediately just start working on case studies. I mean, they don't know what they're doing, but they get in small groups and they work on case studies and they get a case and then they have to figure out, what do I need to know in order to be able to, you know, work on this case? Like if it's someone that has a cough, they go, okay, well, I need to study the physiology of the lung. I need to study the pathology, you know, what can go wrong in this kind of situation. I need to, and then they go off and they use their own learning styles and preferences in terms of how they like to learn to figure all that out. And so, you know, that's an example. Another example is that this kind of fire hose method of education, like the weekend seminar where you sit there for 16 hours and people, and you just have like information fire hosed at you. And then you go back to your clinic at the end of that and you're like, you know, what, how do I even apply this? And so the way I'm setting things up is in a way that maximizes what we know about learning science to retain information and be able to use it in a practical manner. So it's going to be a case-based learning method where we just immediately start looking at labs, interpreting labs, designing treatment protocols. And there'll be a lot of reference material provided to fill in the gaps. But it's really, my intention is to that when somebody finishes their this training, they will be able to start and run a very effective, successful functional medicine practice. That's the goal. I'm not setting out to deliver a whole bunch of information or to give people the broadest possible education in functional medicine. I'm setting out to create super effective functional medicine practitioners. So that's kind of the whole background of it. And more specifically, it's going to be, you know, the curriculum is going to be offered in much shorter segments, like eight to 10 minutes to retain, you know, to maximize retention. There's going to be low stakes quizzes because we know from the learning research that having to recall information after you've learned it, it really dramatically increases retention. There's going to be homework assignments and case assignments, and there'll be a monthly workshop, longer seminar with me where I present cases and advise on cases of participants and answer questions. There'll be weekly support with my trained clinicians, kind of like the university model where there's the larger lecture and then there's the discussion section with the TAs on a week by week basis. And it's going to cover four key areas: diet and lifestyle, like how to customize, you know, a diet and lifestyle recommendations from an ancestral perspective based on the particular patient that you're seeing, functional blood chemistry, gut GI disorders, and HPA axis or adrenal fatigue syndrome. And those are the four core areas that I think are the starting place or should be the starting place for any functional medicine encounter. They're going to help the greatest number of people. And certainly, you know, some people will need more than that. But if that's all you focused on in your entire career and you just learned to do that really well, you would be able to help an enormous number of people, and probably 80% of the people that come through the door, 70%, that's going to be enough to get them back to health.
Yeah, I'm excited for that, Chris. I think it's going to be a wonderful program. And I think you're hitting on something that's really important that's kind of missing from almost all areas of different medicine, at least that I've been involved with, which is that, you know, as a clinician, you have to recognize that everyone's different. And yet, if you have a framework that you can like sort of hang the whole problem around, typically you can move the ball way down the field just using the framework. And then once you start to hit some obstacles, you know, that's when you get into the custom stuff. And so looking forward to having a big group of people who really get this stuff. I think it's gonna be amazing for the world.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm really excited to teach it, and I think it's going to go a lot faster now. All those months of, was just figuring out the frame and the context and the strategy for how to deliver it. And now that I have that settled, I've just been making very quick progress in terms of, taking the actual steps to get it out there. So I hesitate to, make any projections, but my strong intention is to launch it this year and hopefully by before the end of the summer. So we'll, fingers crossed. All right. So today we've got an interesting question, and let's give it a listen.
Hello. I'd like to know your thoughts on juicing, the kind of juicing done by Jay Cordage, and your thoughts on the benefits or negatives of doing so.
All right. So juicing. This is, of course, in the sort of mainstream alternative health community, if you will, juicing is a hugely popular activity and something that gets a lot of airplay and discussion. It's not discussed quite as much in the paleo world. It's not really a part of the paleo meme, partly because our ancestors didn't really have any champion juicers around to juice anything. So certainly from that perspective, it doesn't really fit into the ancestral framework. But as I've said before, the fact that our ancestors didn't do something is not, not enough of a reason for us not to do it. We're not going for paleo reenactment here. We look at things from an ancestral perspective to generate questions and hypotheses and give us some ideas about what may or may not make sense. But we're not going to use the fact that our paleo ancestors weren't juicing as a reason not to do it. So let's talk a little bit about the pros and cons of juicing, and then I'll just give you my sense of the role that juicing might play in a paleo or nutrient dense type of diet. So the pros are that fruits and vegetables are loaded with phytonutrients that more and more studies suggest have a lot of health benefits. These are nutrients that are not the same as the essential nutrients that research is very clear that we need, things like vitamins and minerals, vitamin A, D, C, and minerals like zinc and iron and things like that. I mean, those are all, of course, important. They're also found in fruits and vegetables, but we're talking about other phytonutrients and things that are referred to as antioxidants that are found pretty exclusively in fruits and vegetables. They're not found so much in meat and animal products. They're found more in plants. And these things do, I think, have important health benefits. Overall, they seem to play a hormetic role. And what this means is that something that's hormetic is something that induces a positive adaptation. It's a stressor, but it's a stressor that helps us to adapt and evolve over a longer time scale, or adapt in a shorter time scale. So an example of hormesis that everybody knows about is exercise. And we can talk about weightlifting in particular. So if you go and you lift a weight at a gym and you lift a weight to the point of failure, you're going to be creating kind of some tears in the muscles. And that's a stressor, putting stress on the muscles, and the body's response will be to rebuild that muscle so it's a little bit stronger, so it can ideally deal, with that amount of weight the next time you lift weights. I mean, this is an oversimplification, but that's the general idea. So exercise and weightlifting in particular has a hormetic effect. It appears that a lot of the phytonutrients in fruits and vegetables have the same effects. They're referred to often as antioxidants, but they're really more pro-oxidant, and that they have this hormetic effect where they ramp up the body's own antioxidant defense system. They cause a little bit of stress, and they ramp up the body's own internal antioxidant defense system. So they have an antioxidant effect, but the nutrients themselves are not antioxidants. And this probably explains in part why studies consistently show that fresh fruits and vegetables, or eating them, is associated with better health. So juicing is a way that some people find easier to get more fruits and vegetables into their diet. So that's one possible pro. People with digestive issues who might have trouble breaking down a lot of the fiber that's in whole fruits and vegetables might be able to tolerate juices, and that they're part of the GAPS diet, which is a gut healing diet. For this reason, I think the nutrients in fruits and vegetables can be important for healing, but a lot of people who have a really inflamed gut can't deal with the insoluble fiber and other tough fibers in fruits and veggies. Raw fruits and veggies contain nutrients and substances that are not found in cooked foods or that are lower in cooked foods. So glutathione is a really good example. It's the master antioxidant in the body, helps protect against oxidative damage and has a regulatory effect on the immune system. And glutathione is not really present in cooked vegetables or cooked meats. It's in raw fruits and vegetables and raw meats. So juicing can, you know, give you glutathione. There are enzymes in raw fruits and vegetables that are destroyed in the cooking process. So that's another potential pro. And then, you know, some people feel really good when they do some juicing, and that's obviously another pro. On the con side, depending on what's being juiced, juices can have a lot of sugar. And, you know, I've written and talked about how I don't think that all sugar is, like even small amounts of sugar are toxic, and that we can't tolerate, you know, sugar that in the form of honey or juices like this. But certainly for some people, that could be problematic depending on their metabolic function and insulin and glucose tolerance. So that's one potential issue. When you juice, using most juicers, it removes the fiber, and the fiber in fruits and vegetables can feed the beneficial gut microbiota, and it also increases satiety. So I don't think most people are going to eat too many calories with fruit or vegetable juicing because they're super low in calories anyways, but fiber does play a beneficial role overall in terms of feeding the gut microbiota and increasing satiety. Of course, you can get around that. There's a new kind of device that's become pretty popular called the NutriBullet. You know about the NutriBullet, Steve?
I've heard a little bit. I get marketed to a lot, and so yes, I've seen some of these.
So the NutriBullet is essentially a blender, I think. I don't own one, but I know people who do, and it basically blends and pulverizes the fruit or vegetable so that the fiber is still intact. So it's not technically a juicer, it's more of a blender. And of course, things like the Vitamix has been around for a long time can do that as well. So you're putting the whole fruit in there, the whole vegetables, and you blend it around, and it's more like a fruit or vegetable shake, I suppose, than a juice. So that's one
smoothie.
A smoothie, yeah. So that's one way of getting the benefits. You know, there's still the fiber, so it will be probably may not be as absorbed as quickly or as fully as the juice for some people. But on the other hand, it will have the benefits of the fiber. Another potential con, on the flip side, for people with digestive issues, is that a lot of raw juices can cause loose stool or diarrhea in some susceptible people. And I've seen that in people on the GAPS diet who are early on who start to add raw juices into their diet. Juicing a lot of raw green vegetables, which is really popular in the juicing community, can be problematic for people with thyroid issues, because a lot of those green vegetables have goitrogens, and if iodine intake is low because someone's not eating iodized salt and they're not having fish heads, you know, fish head soup or sea vegetables, then they could very well be iodine deficient. If they have a pre-existing thyroid problem, that could be problematic to have tons of raw kale juice, for example. It's not going to affect everyone, but it can affect some people. And then the last con is just personal pet peeve about juicing and juicers is they're pain in the butt to clean.
I got another good one for you. That one sucks. That one totally sucks.
That's my biggest reason for not juicing, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I've actually had some friends who were essentially sticking to the same recipe on a regular basis, and they're trying to cut costs because obviously sourcing the same recipe every day, good fresh stuff, organic is tough. And so they end up with like half non-organic vegetables. And so you're actually increasing your pesticide load if you continue with the same recipe and you do non-organic. So you got to watch out for that too.
Yeah. I mean, that's the con would be it's expensive to do right. You know, if you're getting local farmers market kind of produce, and you have to have quite a lot of it to make enough juice, of course. So that's another one. So, you know, how do I feel about juicing overall, and what role could it play in someone's diet? I think occasional juicing or even a small amount daily in the context of a whole foods nutrient dense diet is perfectly fine, assuming you don't have any of the issues that I mentioned and you follow some of the guidelines that I just mentioned. I think it can play a therapeutic role in certain situations. I know it's been successful for some people doing the GAPS diet. Some people seem to like doing it like at certain times of the year, if they start to feel sluggish or if they're fighting a cold or a flu and they feel like they need some additional nutrient support or something like that. Like everything else, it depends on the individual and their needs and their health status and circumstances. But, you know, if a patient asks me about it, I essentially, you know, say what I've said here, and I say, and I'm not opposed to them trying it as long as it doesn't, you know, become the focus of their nutrition plan. I'm not a big believer in, obviously, in a diet that is centered around juicing.
Yeah, it seems to be like one of those things that's like a last 10% or last 15% of the overall sort of treatment plan for monitoring your health, you know, when you're trying to mix in sleep and stress and food and movement and then supplements and maybe some tests. And then juicing can eat up a lot of that budget, both mentally as well as monetarily. And it does seem to be very therapeutic for some people. But if you, like you said, if you get focused on that and you miss the 80% that really seems to matter, I think that's where a lot of people don't get what they're looking for.
That's a great point, Steve. And just, you know, to put that another way, you'll probably get more bang for your buck in just dialing in the basics, you know, making sure you're maximizing nutrient density, minimizing toxicity in the diet. You're dialing in your, you know, the best macronutrient ratio for you based on your life, your circumstances and your health status. You're making sure to eat plenty of paleo superfoods like sea vegetables for iodine, fermented foods, fermentable fibers, bone broth, organ meats, things like, you know, all the stuff that I talk about in my book. And then once you've got all that dialed in, then if you want to mess around with juicing, that would be fine. But I would definitely, agree with Steve that focusing on the other stuff first is probably going to be the best approach for most people.
Awesome. Well, if you'd like your question answered on the Revolution Health podcast, please go to chrisgresser.com/podcast question and, you know, go ahead and record your question there. And hopefully we will be talking to you soon about it.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening and talk to you next week.
Yeah, thank you, everyone. In between shows, if you're wondering what Chris is working on, what sort of research, apparently he might be posting things about learning behaviors and cool fun facts like that. He posts all that cool stuff that doesn't necessarily always make the show or the blog at Facebook and Twitter. So go to facebook.com/ChrisKresser LAC and twitter.com/ChrisKresser to get those updates. So thanks for listening. We'll talk to you on the next show.
Thanks, everyone.